him switching out the guns too,
it adds to the dynamics of the scene where it isn't the same kind of shots being fired all the time. He's switching it up every couple of seconds, pretty much.
This is the Action Filmmaking Decoded Podcast. A podcast dedicated to raw action analysis.
Ooh, my gosh. For fans of action cinema out there, how badass would that be?
Each week, we bring you a new action filmmaker to break down your favorite scenes.
360 off a person, round kick the guy from a 360 spin.
Now, introducing your hosts, Darren Tun and Mike Messina.
Hello and welcome back to the Action Filmmaking Decoded Podcast. I am your host, Darren Tun, and with me is my co-host, Mike Messina.
Hello.
Today we are doing AFD news. Today's stories include Dune, we got some Matrix stuff, Extraction, and our fight breakdown will be from the original Matrix, the lobby scene, if you guys remember that. So yeah, let's just jump right back into it. Our first story here is Dune. There was a Jason Momoa BTS released on his channel, actually, that I saw from V-Dan, our previous podcast guest, who shows up in the video. It's a lot of behind the scenes of, you know, learning the fight choreography. I guess they choreographed from the start, even when they were at, I guess you would say, the stunt gym. And moving on to set and sort of Jason Momoa's perspective on that. This is a film directed by Denis Villeneuve. The release date will be on October 22nd. And yeah, super excited about that.
Yeah, I mean, seeing the behind the scenes action stuff really makes me excited to see what we're going to see in the film. You see some of the Jason Momoa fight choreography going on, some really smooth double bladed kind of stuff going on. I'm honestly, about the film itself, I'm a little surprised that Villeneuve got another huge big budget sci-fi epic in Dune from Warner Brothers, being that Blade Runner 2049. Amazing film. Everyone who sees it loves it. Everyone who's into film loves it. Did not make a whole lot of money.
Yeah.
And it was very expensive one to make. So we'll see how this shakes out budget-wise. But I'm glad he's making another big sci-fi movie. You know, I'm not complaining about it.
Yeah, his films have a very like artsy kind of feel to it. They don't necessarily cater to like that fast-cutting, you know, a reaction-grabbing, you know, quick cuts for the audience in order to keep their attention. It's straight, you know, this is the story and this is how I want it to be told. And that's what he does. That's what he does best, honestly. I would say he's probably the best in the world at what he does right now, starting with Arrival and then obviously, like you said, moving on to Blade Runner 2049 and now Dune.
Yeah, we'll see. Maybe with some more action in this one, it'll have a bit of a broader appeal.
Yeah. I'm really, really excited that V-Dan is doing a lot of the action stuff for Dune.
Yeah.
You know, his stuff in the past, I think it all speaks for itself. You know, he's done a lot of fan films. He's done a lot of stuff for Shang-Chi, you know, Skyfall. And now Dune is a big step up from that as well. And big congrats to him.
Totally.
So now we're moving into our trailer roundup. Our first trailer, you probably have all seen it. It's the Matrix trailer that dropped. I know our last AFD News episode, we talked a little bit about the Matrix, but we didn't really have a sort of view on the trailer yet. But the trailer dropped. It's directed by Lana Wachowski, no Lily this time. And its release date is on December 22nd, 2021. Mike, what did we think about this trailer? It was pretty action-packed, I'd say. Keanu kept his hair as well, something that I was pretty happy about.
Honestly, I really liked the shot of him in the tub with a rubber duck on his head.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that
I don't know what that means, but I'm a fan of it. The whole thing just has me really interested in how Hollywood is starting to really nail a lot of these reboots or, you know, this is a sequel, but these soft reboots, revivals of older franchises, seeing how they can kind of recontextualize things in a way that is still true to the old form, but also fresh and new and up to date here. And like one thing that, you know, maybe a more writer storyteller would tell you about the new Matrix is like, with the advent of technology and social media, smartphones, you saw it in the trailer a little bit, so it seems like they're going to address it. We're kind of living in a time where it's more like the actual Matrix in real life than ever before. So it's interesting to see how they'll play with that story-wise. And then you just have that signature Wachowski special effects heavy look to it, which I love that it's coming back. Shouts to Speed Racer, the Wachowski project, criminally underrated and super one of the most visual things I've ever seen on film. But yeah, I'm pumped. It also is crazy to me looking back, Matrix released in 99 and then both sequels came out in 2003. That's crazy. And now it's how many years since this fourth one is coming out?
So many
years. Very interesting
later.
Pacing there. Yeah.
I think it is confirmed, though, that the original character for Morpheus, Lawrence Fishburne, isn't going to be in the film. Now it's definitely Yahya Mateen, Abdul Mateen, yeah.
Interesting. As a different character, you're saying, right?
As Morpheus, I feel like. But I mean, the original actor is not playing.
Right. Interesting.
Yeah. Has Lana Wachowski directed anything since?
I don't know what happened. Like, I mean, they've definitely been active, at least in producer roles. I don't know what they've been doing directorially, though.
Mm-hmm. It might be really cool because this is like their first time back in a directorial role.
If that's true.
We'll have to see. Yeah.
It looks like they co-directed Cloud Atlas in 2012.
Okay. All right.
And I believe everything else looks like they're not directing. They have some other hands in stuff like Jupiter Ascending, Sense 8, the Netflix series.
Yeah. So that means that this is kind of their comeback, essentially, or at least Lana Wachowski's comeback into that directing scene. So I'm really excited to see what that looks like. And the trailer had so much stuff, visual effects, like you were saying, slow-mo jumps, all the like, you know, and obviously that throwback to that classic, you know, Neo training scene from the first movie. Awesome to see Neil Patrick Harris in there as well.
Oh yeah, that's true. I'm excited.
So the next trailer is a Christmas movie. This is Hawkeye we're talking about here. This is directed by Bert and Birdie Rhys Thomas, if I'm pronouncing that correctly. The release date will be November 24th. It's a Christmas movie. So I think that's the debate, right? Is it a Christmas movie? Because, you know, we have that whole Die Hard debate, right? And it's like, is it more action or more Christmas?
Yeah. The age-old debate of Die Hard. Then later on, Shane Black films. And then now it looks like we'll have another contender to fight over during our Christmas family visits. But yeah, it looked really good. So it's not a film. It's another Disney Plus Marvel limited series. I'm pretty pumped that Hawkeye has a sort of standalone project here. I feel like amongst the ranks of the more, we'll say OP, the super mystical or magical or technology driven heroes of the Marvel universe, it can be hard for a guy with a bow and arrow to really shine through. So I'm glad people like Black Widow got a standalone. Now I'm glad that we're going to see something where Hawkeye can really live within his own universe and have some of that action shine through.
He's a great character. So happy to see them develop that a little bit more. You know, they went into his family a little bit in, I think, Age of Ultron. And they also did it in Endgame as well. It would be really interesting to dive deeper into that family dynamic and I guess what that means to Hawkeye.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure Hailee Steinfeld's character here is going to have something to do with like, oh, she's kind of like my daughter. And this is part of my character arc throughout this series with me balancing bows and arrows with family and stuff like that. Also interesting to me, she seems to be like the first sidekick character in the MCU, unless I missed something, because I definitely haven't seen everything from the MCU. But to me, that is foundational building blocks of what is it going to look like two generations from now, the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Is War Machine technically a sidekick to Iron Man?
I wouldn't say to his face, but that's a good point. You could make that argument, yeah. You could. I'm thinking maybe like with an age difference too. I guess a Teen Titans sort of thing. I know Teen Titans is DC, but what does that sidekick team up look like in this universe?
Yeah, and this trailer also has a lot of, it looks like they had that classic Hawkeye, you know, turn around and shoot, slow-mo shot in there. Yeah, so I'm really glad they're including some of that in there as well. And it seems to be very comedy heavy more than I expected. It's like, oh, you know, Hawkeye, I had a dark past. The people are coming to chase me, all that stuff. And then when it goes into like the real trailer bit, it's very comedic. It's like, oh, honey, I'm going to be home. And then throws some sort of explosive back at the bad guys in that film. Yeah. And then Hailee Steinfeld is there making a couple jokes and whatnot. So it seems
some
very like
such,
lighthearted. Yeah.
Yeah, it makes sense for a Christmas sort of a thing.
Yeah, I'm excited. Next up, we have Cobra Kai, the trailer for the next season of Cobra Kai. It is created and directed by Josh Heald, John Hurwitz, Hayden Schulberg.
And some other people too, because it's a series like different people will direct, you know, an episode here, episode there.
And the release date's looking like December 31st.
Which to me seems a little weird. I know last season they pushed it from, I think, January 8th, and then they pushed it up a week to January 1st, which means it happens on New Year's after the parties happen. They're claiming it's going to release December 31st, the day everyone's prepping to go to parties for New Year's, or, you know, with COVID, I guess we'll see what happens on the party front. But that smells a little fishy to me. I feel like they might pull some release date trickery again. But dude,
right. It is a little bit weird. Yeah.
A little bit. Yeah. We'll see what happens. We'll see. seeing Terry Silver in this trailer coming back, Karate Kid Part 3. I remember when his character teaser trailer dropped a while back. Goosebumps. So pumped to see him returning. I mean, he is the perfect...
Because we have essentially, right, that duo. At the beginning, you have the interaction between Johnny and Daniel, and that's really, really interesting to see because both of their teaching styles are so different. And that's exactly what you wanted. You know, as an audience, you're like, oh man, maybe it's not going to work out, but there's a little bit of fun there. There's a little bit of drama there in how maybe, you know, they resolve those differences and come together and teach together. And you obviously have that classic team up, but then, you know, Kreese was always, you know, just alone and he was the bad guy. But now you have that Kreese and Terry Silver team up. So that's going to be 2v2 right there.
Oh, that's true. Like we'd better... Or actually, I don't know if you'll get it this season. This is something that wigs me out a little bit. It feels like the whole series has been building to this kind of a thing where, you know, they've been teasing the Johnny-Daniel relationship the whole time. Now they're finally together on the same side. Now you have Kreese and then the extra final villain from the original Karate Kid trilogy coming in, Terry Silver. It seems to me like this is a pretty logical, like, climax end the series here point. But I believe they're already renewed for another 2 seasons after this or something like that. Another season
or two
after
this. They're going to stretch it out. They're not going to fight till, like...
That's what I'm thinking.
After.
Like, it's going to be an anime kind of thing. You're going to have to wait another 3 years to see that 2-on-2 fight or something. But we'll see what happens. It's going to be great either way, I'm sure. It's a show that really knows what it is, knows how to balance the over the top with the grounded, the campiness with the realistic. So,
yeah. And that final fight from that last season, it was just wow. that was something else. There were a lot of one shots, and I'm a huge fan of one shots. So, seeing all that stuff done in one take and it's all like these kids fighting but it's, you know, this going on here, that going on there, it makes the scene feel like larger than it really is. It's so, it gives it a kind of grandiose vibe to it.
Yeah. I would say totally.
Yeah, super excited. And obviously, you know, they, like you said, they've been teasing Johnny and Daniel coming together, and I think they did it at just the right time because right now they've been able to stretch that rivalry for so long. And they're like, all right, you know, we're not going to stretch it anymore. They came together. This is now when they're collaborating.
Yeah.
Next up, we have Cowboy Bebop. I think what was released was the intro sequence, right? If I'm correct. This is directed by Alex Garcia Lopez and Michael Cattleman. The series will be released on November 19th. And this intro got me really excited because it looked very similar to the old intro that they had. They played, you know, that classic tank soundtrack over it, and Ayn casted again. I'm glad they casted him correctly. Pretty much spot on.
Pretty good. Yeah, that audition must have went well.
Yeah. Yeah, it had a very sort of Incredibles vibe to it. I don't really know what it was, but
the soundtrack I think really adds to it. Yeah. I know the Incredibles soundtrack is very old school spy sort of influenced in its soundtrack especially. And then this soundtrack is a very distinct jazz blues influence as well. That's a good pull actually, because both are very much products of existing, really established, well-defined genres. Yeah. And this one thing that threw me off a little bit was seeing these live action incarnations of some of those classic anime villains from Cowboy Bebop. They gave me some Doctor Who vibes, which I wasn't necessarily ready for.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it felt a little weird to me, but I'll definitely have to wait for the whole series. I'm going to watch it regardless because I'm a Cowboy Bebop fan. But it also just begs the question, like, what does a live action anime really look like? On the one hand, you have stuff like, you know, the Death Note thing that came out from Netflix that a lot of people didn't like, that had a very grounded feel that it was going for. Yeah. Then on the other hand, you have the aforementioned Speed Racer from the Wachowskis, which is basically a live action anime and its style. And it's so much color and animation going on in the live action version, but definitely going to give this one a shot. I'm thinking a lot of people have been talking about how the character of Ed is not revealed at all. And apparently it's confirmed that Ed is going to be in it, but Ed is, anything of Ed. I'd imagine Ed, the fan favorite character, basically the small, like quirky child that follows all these adults slinging guns around on the adventures. I'd imagine maybe that's just a 10th final episode cliffhanger thing where they're like, oh, look at this character. Now you get to see him live action. So renew us for a second season. Yeah. We'll see. We'll see.
I understood what you meant. Doctor Who vibes and all. It was kind of cool to see how they were portraying some of the characters now in live action. Obviously, you have the afro and all that stuff going on.
Hakeem, yeah.
Yeah. I saw a good bit of like funky like camera angles in there as well. Wide angle from the bottom up, you know, just like different funky angles. It kind of gave it that ultra realistic, like hyper realistic look, I would say. I don't know how I would describe it exactly, but it was interesting to see them incorporate that in there as well. And just switching back and forth between, you know, the animated version of the characters back to like the live action version of the characters in that intro, I thought was a very interesting choice. I kind of liked it, you know, stylistically. I thought it worked to some degree.
Yeah, definitely a pretty faithful recreation of the original opening. It looked like all of the animation they used in this version was sort of like animated over actual footage of the actors doing whatever movements and stuff like that. So you could see when the hand is firing a gun and it looks animated or cel-shaded, it looks like they actually took a 3D whatever of an actual actor doing it. And did it like that. So I'm excited to see how they're going to make further stylistic concessions, bringing it into life.
Yeah, I was looking at some of the comments in the YouTube section and they were like, yeah, I'm super excited, but I'm also super worried. So I think that's how most of us feel, because what's happened in the past with, you know, anime recreations, have they been great?
Most have been less than great, but...
Yeah. So hopefully they nail it on this one. I guess we'll see. Next up, we have Extraction 2, directed by Sam Hargrave, AFD alum, also known as one of the very first podcast guests that we've ever had on this podcast.
Yeah, I think the first that you had.
Super talented guy, so I'm really, really excited for this trailer. One of the big things that this trailer shows, it's not really a trailer, it's more of a teaser, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
It shows the hashtag Rake Lives. Rake is kind of, I guess, thrown off the side of this bridge after getting shot in the neck, and he falls to the bottom of the river.
Which is how the first one ends, yeah.
Yeah. And then this kind of shows the continuation of that, where he comes back up to the surface and hashtag Rick lives. So I'm really excited to see what Hargrave does. The Russo brothers do amazing work anyways. So having them produce this film again for a second installment is great.
Yeah, not a whole lot to glean from the trailer, because like you said, just a teaser. I am the writer in me, though. Very satisfied with how hard in the paint they're going with this whole water metaphor. Like they committed to this water rebirth, you know, kind of coming up from the river and drowning and stuff.
Yeah.
They use it throughout the first film. They used it here again. Maybe it'll come back in the second one.
Yeah. And like you said, towards the end of that film, the little kid comes back out of the water again.
Yeah. From the swimming pool. Yeah.
Hopefully we have Hargrave on here. Hint, hint. Maybe he'll come back on and talk about Extraction 2. Sometime in the future. We'll see. Stay tuned for that. Next up, we have Army of Thieves. This is directed by Matthias Schweighofer.
Oh boy, we got this.
Oh my God.
Schweighofer.
I'm going to go with that.
Schweighofer.
I'm going to go with Matthias Schweighofer.
Okay.
Anyone in the audience that wants to correct me can do that, and we'll correct it for next time.
Directing and starring in this film, yes.
Yeah, he is both. And Zack Snyder is a co-writer and co-producer in this film. Excited for that. Release date coming October 29th. So we'll see. And you were saying this is kind of like a follow-up to Army of the Dead. This is now Army of Thieves, right?
Yes, a prequel. And the whole zombie, it's super interesting to me. And I love this, that they had this awesome popular zombie movie. And they said, okay, we're going to do a follow-up. It's going to be a prequel. Minimal zombies. It's a bank heist movie. It is in-universe. And I think the premise is that because zombies are like destabilizing the world, it's the perfect time to do a heist or something like that. Mm. But, you know, not a single zombie in the trailer as well. That's just such a ballsy move on their part.
Yeah.
And I'm all for it.
There was a little bit in like the TV screen, but they didn't actually show any.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I believe. But it's really interesting how this trailer starts out with this guy who's a professional safecracker, but doesn't actually rob banks. So it's weird how they run these, I guess, safecracking competitions. And then you have this guy who's like the best in the world, and then.
Is that a real thing?
Ability, yeah.
I'm sure it's a real thing, right?
Competitions are a thing.
Yeah, the subreddit is hopping for that.
Yeah, but I like the fun take that they had on it, where it's like, it's essentially like a heist film. It's like an Ocean's 11. But they mentioned that. It's like, is this like one of those cool movies where each one of us have a specific role and that's what we do and we're like a team together? Like, yeah, yeah. So it's a self-aware comedy.
Yeah,
film.
Yeah.
I'm excited to see what comes out of that and what Matthias has in store, Zack Snyder as well.
Yeah, totally.
Last up in the trailer section, we have Minal Murali. This was actually put onto us by Vlad Rimberg, who's doing a lot of work there. This is directed by Basile Joseph, and the release date is coming December 24th.
Christmas so, Eve. I did not realize when we wrote that down.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah. We got a little teaser so far. We didn't really get any full trailer for it. It's this teaser where it shows this tracking shot, goes along a table, and then it lands on a TV screen. And on the TV screen, you have the Minal Murali logo. And that's how they announced it, pretty much. And there was also a TV spot. I think not a TV spot, but like a behind-the-scenes sort of release of it. Like the director talking about it, the actors talking about it. So
There might have been a longer trailer, because I definitely saw some footage from the film. I don't know if you saw that, but it wasn't a whole lot.
I think it was like a feature or something like that. That was the one where the director and the actors were talking about the process of making it. And then they showed like clips alongside. So
it looks cool. I mean, it's billed as the first Bollywood superhero film.
3-hour runtime.
3-hour runtime, as Bollywood films usually do. I'm sure there's going to be some sort of dance number, some really cool action with Vlad Rimberg at the helm. Vlad Rimberg, I saw, has his name in the trailer as the lead action man here. So I'm pumped. And I believe Minal translates to lightning or something to that nature. So you see the logo has a little lightning bolt on it as well. And Murali is the gentleman's name. So Lightning Murali is that translation. Mm-hmm. I'm excited to see it. Sometimes you'll see Bollywood films sort of taking American action film tropes, popular blockbuster film tropes, and then sort of churning it through its own cultural lenses and then having something new and a bit fresh come through. So we'll see how this looks once it releases.
Yeah, we'll be updating you guys along the way as we get more footage. Some honorable mentions here. We have Last Night in Soho, Venom, Red Notice, which is the Gal Gadot, Ryan Reynolds, and Dwayne Johnson film, which I saw was looks pretty cool. Stranger Things Season 4, Witcher Season 2, Sandman, and The Harder They Fall.
I haven't seen Stranger Things. I haven't seen Witcher, but I hear great things about those. Sandman from Neil Gaiman, of course, he's amazing. So pumped for Sandman. Harder They Fall, Western, Idris Elba, and some other big names there too. Regina King, I believe. So that looks cool.
Yeah,
we talked a little bit about Red Notice, Last Night in Soho, of course, coming from Edgar Wright. Seems a little less action, a little more sort of thriller kind of a thing
he
going on.
He did say that film was a little bit out of his sort of genre. He's going
a totally
different route this time. So very interesting to see Edgar Wright's take on different genres. And
I did not realize Venom 2 was directed by Andy Serkis until very recently.
Yeah.
It's back on my radar now. And I heard some of the reviews came in. They're like, it's a quick 90 minutes. And they said it was like crazy and it was fun. A lot of the reviews said weird, which makes me very interested to see what this movie is. I love anything with weird as a main adjective.
Weird and Andy Serkis.
That's it. Like, what else do you need?
Next up, we have the headline reads, Russo Brothers may not return to the MCU due to Black Widow lawsuit. This is an article by Eric Schwartzel and Joe Flint. Due to the lawsuit and how Black Widow was released and how Johansson was paid as a result, Russo Brothers and Disney have reportedly hit an impasse in negotiations for their Marvel Cinematic Universe return. According to the Wall Street Journal, the Black Widow lawsuit has a directing duo questioning how a new MCU movie from them would be released and how they would be able to be paid for it. So,
yikes, man.
A lot of controversy there.
Yeah. Breakups are always rough. And then when you throw in a couple $1 million and a lot of press in the mix, does not necessarily get better.
Yeah. And I mean, Joe and Anthony Russo have been at the helm of Marvel for quite a long time, I would say, at this point. You know, Endgame and Infinity War and then Captain America's before that. You know, they literally made those films what they are today. So it would be interesting to see now, like, how the MCU is going to continue. Are they going to find new talent if, you know, the Russo brothers drop out?
Yeah. And then underneath all of that, the stuff that the consumers and the fans will really feel the direct effects of, there's also just a question of like, how are performers going to be treated as a result of all this? Even if the Russo brothers decide to stay and they don't change the status quo at all, although it seems like they are going to change the status quo a little bit, what ripple effects is MCU going to be a little more tentative in terms of negotiating contracts? Are they going to try to play hardball even harder than they have before? Mm-hmm. We'll see. Hopefully it shakes out and will benefit some of the actors, some of the performers, and the kind of people we talk to on the show as well.
Yeah, it's just this big jump, right, with the Disney Plus platform. I think that was Johansson's biggest problem with how she was paid was that, I mean, she didn't really get any earnings from, I guess, the theater showings of the movie because everything was on Disney Plus, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So now it looks like Marvel is taking a different turn with Shang-Chi. And how they're, you know, pushing it back into theaters and whatnot. So we'll see about that and see how they deal with that in the future.
Yeah, totally. And speaking of Shang-Chi and being in the theater.
That is our next up. We have Shang-Chi, highest grossing domestic film of 2021. This is an article by Sarah Witten. Since its September debut, Shang-Chi has garnered $196.5 million in the US and Canada, outpacing ticket sales from Universal's Fast 9 and Disney's other Marvel films like Black Widow.
That's a lot of money.
Wow. Globally, Shang-Chi has generated $363.4 million, the fourth highest haul of 2021.
That's even more money than the other number.
Yeah. So big numbers for Shang-Chi. I'm really, really excited, especially, you know, being Asian American, growing up Asian American, seeing Asian Americans in film now, especially in like a superhero film like this. Yeah, it's really exciting. And I think it just shows now that Hollywood's going to start creating more Asian American media, hopefully. And that's our break-in.
Yeah, totally. And one thing people don't realize as much either is on the consumer side, the Asian demographic, that's a pretty big chunk of the people who are buying movie tickets. Like that Asian people go to the movies.
Yeah, yeah.
As a general target demo. So that's another thing to take into consideration when we're looking at who is going to be cast and what stories are going to be told and which heroes are going to be chosen as well.
Yeah. But seeing this film get released at a time where, you know, a lot of Asians were struggling, you know, with the pandemic and dealing with Asian hate, it's really great to see a film like this get the support that it had, you know, and hopefully it goes on to do some pretty incredible things.
Oh yeah, and I'm pumped to see Shang-Chi the character move forward as well.
Yeah, and hopefully, you know, more Asian superheroes after that, who knows. So from here, we're gonna be breaking down the Matrix scene, the Matrix lobby scene. So yeah, stay tuned for that.
Holy shit. Back up. Back up.
All right. So welcome back to our breakdown section. We are going over the Matrix lobby sequence from the first film. Neo and Trinity have gone back into the Matrix to save Morpheus. And this is kind of their break-in into that building where they're holding Morpheus at the moment. And it's super awesome because they brought all the guns, all the firepower. And they're coming back with big knowledge. They downloaded the whole database.
Big knowledge. I like that. Yeah.
I feel like this is that part of that film that you really see both Neo and Trinity, especially Neo, grow into his character at the end. Because, I mean, at the beginning of the film, he's kind of unsure and doesn't really know how to use the powers and whatever. And he's going in and they say he's the one, but he's not really, you know, living up to that yet, just yet, I would say. And then this final sequence is just like, wow, you see all that combined. You come in with the trench coats, those iconic trench coats, the sunglasses. This scene has everything.
Yeah, yeah. And to your point, like a big character turning point there and such a big thesis of any Chosen One sort of a storyline, if it's this or if it's Star Wars or whatever, such a big appeal of that is just seeing someone go through the mundane and then come into their own and become larger than life, or even more than that, just seeing someone fulfill their potential. And like you're saying, seeing them do that in such a visual way, very satisfying as the viewer.
I've always tried to figure out what makes this scene so awesome. I mean, it starts, right, with him going in knowing that there's a crap ton of guns in this duffel bag. He knows he's going to take these dudes out or whatever. He's just walking in there so confidently. He's like, I got this. I'm on the video game at, you know, this video game's at like level one. I'm at like level 3000. You know?
He's OP. He's been farming. Yeah. Been grinding.
I mean, he even opens his jacket to reveal that he has guns under there. You know what I mean? He gives himself away entirely. And that's when the whole fight breaks out. You know, he kicks the guy in the chest. The guy goes flying back, slow motion, starts, you know. And that's when he pulls out the dual...
Those SMGs, yeah.
Yeah, from his trench coat. And he starts firing away. I think
that's an underrated bit of this scene. If you were to say like the lobby fight scene in the Matrix, they're thinking of the part with the pillars when everyone has machine guns out. But this part is the perfect thesis for the rest of the violent explosion that's going to happen. You see
him... It's a lot of buildup, I would say.
It is a lot of buildup. It is, yeah.
It's the most awesome buildup I've ever seen.
I love that those initial security guards are wearing white, so you see any squibs or any blood or any bullet hits that happen, they're really stark against those nice white shirts. I love how one guy's reading the newspaper and it gets chopped in half. It's a nice tactile little addition that helps the texture of the scene. I love the bag being set down at the beginning of the scene, and then that is when Trinity comes in and she grabs the bag. And I love that before she actually enters the scene, you hear her enter the scene. So you hear the metal detector go off. Then the guy looks over and then she shoots him. So much better than if she were to just walk in and shoot a guy. It would feel kind of random. Having the detector go off and then having her pick up the bag adds just this small bit of satisfying cause and effect in that initial bit of the scene. And again, because it's Trinity's entrance,
it's a little bit of that like setup for reveal, right?
Yeah, exactly. In such a small way. And it's not like, oh, I wonder what's going to happen with this bag. It's not a surprise, but it is just, you know, you do X and then Y happens. And it's a nice crunchy sort of a thing to add in.
It's like, who else is there with him? And then it's like, oh, shoot, it's Trinity. Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah. And like I think you were saying, too, it's, you know, Trinity and Neo in black and security guards in white. And you have that contrast at the beginning. Obviously, you know, the special forces, I think, comes in later and then they're all dressed in black. But yeah at least at that beginning, that contrast between the two where you can tell the two very, very starkly apart, that's also very visually appealing to me.
So much swag.
Exactly. So much swag. So you have those two security guards or those couple security guards and they go down pretty quickly. And then that's when all these other guys come out with even larger guns, more protection, more armor. And the pillars just start getting destroyed, right?
Oh, yeah.
They just go down to, you know, almost nothing at that point. I wonder how much they had to reset. We got to talk to someone from that film to really figure out the details there. But
yeah, I need to see some more behind the scenes of that. And because of those pillars being destroyed, you have pieces shattering off and turning into dust. You have those beautiful profile shots of Keanu Reeves running and gunning past all the pillars, and then there's just explosions of materials and shrapnel moving all around. It's a fantastic visual thing to see. I also noticed very John Woo, not a single reload here. You empty the magazine,
unlimited ammo.
Just toss it, get another one out. And one thing that's interesting here is when I think about boring old school action shootouts, I think about a macho hero who never gets hit. And then it's shot like a dialogue scene where it's just a shot of him shooting a gun and then you cut to the guy getting hit. And technically, all those are still true here. It's OP heroes. It's shot reverse shot in terms of the action. It's not like Extraction where you're doing fancy, you know, martial arts disarms and stuff. It's just, again, shot reverse shot. It does all those same things that maybe more boring action scenes will do for shootouts, but it's so visually, like they nail it here. Yeah, which is fascinating to me.
Say that, you know, that mixture between the slow-mo and the live action really sets it apart. There's this amazing slow-mo shot of Keanu like firing his weapon and then just the bullets dropping next to his...
The casings,
right next to his trench coat just waving. And it's like, wow, like all that movement, man, in that one little piece, it's incredible. You know,
yeah, and him switching out the guns too is it adds to the dynamics of the scene where it isn't the same kind of shots being fired all the time. He's switching it up every couple of seconds, pretty much.
Right.
Then you have the wire work as well.
Yeah, the wire work, especially with Trinity climbing up the wall. It's like, what the hell? Like, who thinks of that? Right? Just someone walking up a wall like that in the middle of a fight scene. Like, when does that ever happen? I think this is like the first time the audience at that time
for most people, have seen something that crazy, you know, where, mm-hmm. you know, people are flying around and shooting at the same time. It's that introduction to that Gun Fu kind of style.
Yeah, that John Woo style. I love how they have her kick a guy's shotgun over his head and behind his back where she catches it and then shoots it from behind. Like,
I always remember that. I was like, how did she do that? Like, that's,
how does that work? It doesn't work, but here it works because we're in the Matrix.
Yeah, yeah.
Just dripping in style. And then, of course, I love how they don't really punch. They kick everything. They kick off walls. They kick people in the face. Mm. They kick on people's chest to jump higher to then kick them in the face with the other leg. It's just so much style, like you're saying, yeah.
And then you have that amazing tracking shot with Keanu coming in here. And as he's firing and going past the pillars, you have him doing a cartwheel in between catching a gun and then firing with that other gun too. It's like, wow, the precision, you know, like how did he think about all that? It's like, it just shows the Matrix, man, like what he's doing at that moment and how he's using his abilities and how he's thinking like a million times per second, you know what I mean? And oh, catching this gun here. Okay, yeah, like everything's planned, you know, it's so smooth.
And on top of all that, never loses his glasses. Sunglasses.
Yeah, the glasses never come
off. Hit, never fall, staying pristine.
Yeah, I'm really interested to see how, I guess they put some of this into the new Matrix film, at least, you know, when it comes to slow motion and all that, you know, gun fu stuff. That
oh, yeah, Matrix mixed with all the advances that action filmmaking has had since then, since 99, or I guess 03, when the second and third Matrix came out. Matrixes? How you would say?
Matrix, yeah.
Matrix movies, we'll say trilogy.
That's what they'll say.
Yeah, yeah, that's we'll go with that. The Matrix trilogy, yeah. Yeah, I'm excited to see a modernized, updated version of that kind of filmmaking.
Yeah, I remember watching this when I was little and I was like, how do I recreate all this stuff? I mean, yeah, you know, you got the gun effects and whatnot, but man, like how does a little kid like me recreate all those, you know, explosions and then wire work and running up the walls? I was always so curious about that. Like, yeah, maybe I could tilt the camera and make it look like, you know, gravity is pointed different directions and whatnot. But this scene heavily inspired a lot, I would say.
I mean, it captured the imagination of a lot of people. And when a film gets a young kid to ask the question, how did they film that? That's when you start to make filmmakers. That's when you start to inspire people and change lives and courses of their careers, things like that.
No, definitely. Matrix made me, for sure.
That's the t-shirt. That's the hashtag right there.
I think that's about it.
That's about it, yeah.
All right. Thank you guys so much for coming back and listening and watching. If you're on YouTube, we have a new YouTube platform. So if any of you guys want to watch the video version of any of your favorite episodes, those are going to be up there. I think we have a couple. And then we also have the older episodes, which we didn't record video for, but all that is also going to be on YouTube as well. So add that to your streaming platform list.
If you liked that, please consider supporting us on Patreon at patreon.com/actionfilmmaking and leaving a review on Apple Podcasts. Stay up to date on the show by visiting our website, actiondecoded.com, and by following us on Instagram at actionfilmmakingpodcast. Until next time, thanks for listening.